We had a really lovely conversation before we actually hit recording, and it was like really nice to catch up and talk with everybody. And you know, 99% of me was quite obviously like there with my friends and having a good time and catching up. But like 1% of me was absolutely like, let's keep the substitute teacher talking about his divorce so that he doesn't actually like make us do anything kind of vibes.
Which one of us is the substitute teacher?
Please say it's my mom used to be one. Can it be me? Please. She wasn't even nice to my friends. Please.
Damn, that's a real kind of bum.
Everyone was like, your mom's kind of strict.
And you were like, no.
My mom? She lets me go to the movies. I don't know why. She didn't.
What grade?
It was, you know, off and on, like, depending on, like, if it was a Tuesday she didn't like, you know. It didn't have to do with me.
What?
She was not consistent with her rules, is my point.
what grade did she substitute teach?
Oh, any, like...
Gotcha.
Wherever she was beckoned, that's where she went.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Your original answer was so much more interesting.
Thank you.
She would just be like, it's Tuesday, I'm sick of Becky, like go see an Underworld. Is that your origin story?
Yeah, what? That's why I love the series, is because I jumped out a 4-story building and I landed on both my feet.
It was so cool.
And I was fine. And then I went to go see the movie and I was like, oh my God, Celine does what I do. We both do that building jump thing.
Wait, so is this one of the ones you have seen? You've seen them all, right? I forget. This movie made me stupid.
There's no way to know if I've seen them all, because I watch them, nothing's coming back up. Like, as I watch this, there's no recall. But Wendy says we watched them all together, so who do I believe? Wendy? No. Me? Definitely not. So... I don't like this movie.
This sucked.
What? You didn't? What?
It's crazy, I know. I know.
This movie almost felt like it was giving me what I asked for in like a passive aggressive way.
Yes.
It was like, oh, you want us to chill out on the mythology? You want more colors in the color palette? You want more action? Here you go, idiot. Here you go, you fucking dimwit. Here, fucking take it. Put on your fucking 3D glasses. I actually have like a lot of takes on this movie, but the very first thing I want to get out the gate is, was it obvious to either of you that something had changed in the technical filmmaking?
Yes.
And could you tell that this was optimized for 3D? Like, that this was shot for 3D?
I thought about it later. That the 3D element did not initially jump out at me, because I feel like Underworld is pretty in your face generally.
Sure.
But the way that it's filmed looks bad. Like, it just looked like... It looked like a college... that's a little harsh, but, like, just the frames were weird. Like, it just looked like almost like a telenovela in certain moments in the rate. And, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. It just was, like... Yeah, I was, like, taken out of it many a time. It didn't have that, like, swift, ghost-like energy of the first, you know? Where it's, like, moving at this, like, very steady pace. I don't know.
$70 million fucking dollars.
No!
Twice the budget of, like, the last two, am I
No!
Correct? It looks like a fan film. It looks like a really impressive fan film. It blew my mind to fucking smithereens that this cost nearly $100 million.
That is really mean to me that they
there's so much to cover on the things that went wrong here. I don't know if it matters, because we've been real chill about intros for like this mini series. But in case you were wondering, what is the name of the podcast that you clicked on and might already be subscribed to?
Hope you are.
Welcome to Dead Horse. Hope yes. you're subscribed. Hope you're leaving a review, rating us 5 stars, and getting angry at us about how you feel like Underworld Awakening is actually great.
So good.
Now, we're... fuck you. Honestly, if you're getting mad about us thinking that, I...
You're no fan of ours.
I want you to let us know.
I want you to let us know in the comments. No, please don't.
Don't.
Please
don't. We love don't you. Don't do that. It's tough if someone does love it. That would be hard.
I kind of want to meet that person. I kind of want to, like, I don't know. I kind of want to bum, like, the cheapest cigarette that exists off of them and, like, get them talking about Underworld. Get them talking about, like, why do you feel like it took them 4 movies to perfect this thing that you just kept coming back to see? I real quick, welcome to Dead Horse. We're a podcast that talks about movie franchises, the overlooked, under-discussed, overextended. We're talking about low art, and there's too much of it. It's the Underworld series. We're all sad, and we make art, and we love each other.
I'm Becky.
I'm Dixon.
I'm still PJ. I tried.
You're consistent, at least.
Am I even that? So this is coming out, these movies have been coming out 3 years after each other pretty regularly. This series owns January. They were slated to make another one, and the team that was involved for the first three, best as I can tell, is barely involved in this. Len Wiseman does a little bit of work on the script, but it's directed by these two Swedish guys, Marlon and Stein, who had directed like a feature or two before this. And the result is this movie that came out at the beginning of 2012 that was shot on the Red Epic in 3D, and it looks like shit. Here's the first thing that's coming to mind for me is I was watching this and I kept thinking of Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, where like, even if you, like Dixon, didn't really love like the wavelength of the first two and the tone and the way that like a particular director and creative team like owned a sort of material. And I know you did prefer Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, but there is this persistent feeling when someone is coming into a series that has had existing creative ownership for a while, when you can feel new cooks not being able to get the recipe right. Because I've been shitting on the Underworld movies for 3 movies, and now I'm watching this thing, and I'm like, wait a second, but my mom cut the crust off.
Yeah, that doesn't taste right.
It doesn't taste right. You're supposed to butter both sides of the bread before you grill the cheese. Yeah. Mom puts mayo in there. It's gross, but I eat it, and that's how she does it. And now you're really feeling like, what is it like to watch an Underworld movie that feels wrong?
What makes an Underworld movie right, you know? And it's like, now I feel like I know more.
The first 3 movies, for all their faults and things I've derided them for, I feel like we're never really lacking in some kind of passion, be it in the, like, incredibly convoluted mythos or, like, the production design or just something. There was always, like, some person was like really, really hype about at least one element of this film, which I simply didn't feel at all about anything in this movie. What the point of comparison I kept coming to, especially after I learned it was in 3D, was that that god-awful Clash of the Titans remake, like, from its like complete non-existence in the popular consciousness to that like ruddy, like 3D optimized early 2010s look where everything looks like it's kind of on the same two-dimensional plane.
And too bright.
Too bright. Just like, it really, I was reading an old AV Club article about about Tim Burton's Batman movie and how it works, because Tim Burton, though he wasn't a Batman fan, like he wasn't a comic book guy, like really honed in on a couple of elements and sort of blew that up to be about the whole mythos, like his the Gotham in his movies being like this horrible cavernous slash extremely Catholic towering fucking, just so much production design and darkness. And like, I think the third movie there was something a bit similar where it was directed by the production designer who got to go a bit more apeshit, but you could also feel that the director was like, oh, this is the part of the thing that interests me the most, so I'm gonna really hone in on that. And that's right. You know, the like passionate star-crossed love story. I'm not sure that these directors did they allow movies in Sweden? Like, had they seen not let alone an Underworld movie, a film before this? I got mad. This pissed me off.
Yeah, because damn. It's not so bad you can really laugh at it. Like, you have to be with it. So it's almost like someone's spoon-feeding you something and you're not hungry for that, you know? Like, you have to watch each part because it's still fairly complicated, you know? It's not laughable, it's just infuriating. Like, I think overall my frustration with this is like, yes, as complicated and dense as the mythology is in the last three, that is the heart of Underworld, right? Is the culture of the species, of the fighting. And I was a little bit intrigued in the beginning of this one, and yes. We'll get into a summary, yeah. But it's largely about humans have discovered lichens and vampires, and they have begun to eradicate them, and we're dealing with, like, this, like, science testing facility that's creating hyper lichens, like crazy monster beasts. I was a little intrigued by the idea of humans knowing about them now. I was like, that's a worthy, you know, adversity for this series, right? Is to be known and to be discovered. But the direction that they went with it, in my opinion, lacks all of the grandeur of the fantasy and the culture. And it gets really technical and nitty, just like ultra specific on fake science. And it was just so lacking a soul.
The introduction of the humans discovering it initially, like, kind of, I don't know if excited is the right word, but intrigued me, like, sure. Becky, because like it is, you know, a major theme of the first three movies is sort of like the essential pointlessness of this conflict between vampires and lichens. So when it's like humans have discovered vampires and lichens and are doing everything they can to eradicate them, the logical assumption would be like, oh, they're going to have to band together, like to, you know, try to survive amidst a human population completely overtaken by the notion that these creatures, all of them, need to be eradicated. But that's not what happens, and I kind of can't explain what does.
The series is called Underworld, and it's all in secret, and that's sort of like the illicitness of the fighting is like fun, you know? So when you're found out, I didn't want to be with the human perspective very much. And we were with the fucking detective. We were with, like, all of these humans for so long. And it's like, that's not what this series is about. It's not about humanity, you know? I don't care about them right now. And you know what? Celine doesn't care about her daughter, so I don't care about them either. Like, so there was funny. Nothing to care about. It was... I had no dog in this fight.
Yeah, I guess we should get to a summary, but just in the short period of time that we've been talking, like, the amount of stuff we've covered that, like, could work, like, should work, that doesn't. Like, this is something that came up when I went to see one of those shitty fucking X-Men movies that's made by that fucking inveterate child gobbler Bryan Singer. Days of Future Past is the one where they were like, oh, Bryan, you haven't You haven't done coke on set in 2 weeks. I think you're good now. You can direct another X-Men movie. Come on back, dude. You're good. And it's this X-Men movie that starts after this gigantic apocalyptic event has taken place. And when the story starts, a bunch of very interesting legacy characters are just spitting exposition at each other about this fascinating thing that took place in the, like, intervening 20 years between sequels. 20 years of movie time, maybe, like, 3 years in, like, in between actual sequels. And there's something about the most interesting, dramatic stuff in a movie happening off-screen that just kills me. And you know, the Underworld movies have this very specific, yes, like, portentous Victorian comic book like language about them. This movie says we're gonna go in a whole different, yes, stylistic direction.
Yeah, God.
This is gonna open with like District 9 like news footage of this enormous thing that has happened in the world that is a very big fucking deal, and it gets swept under the rug so quickly. It is all just table setting to have, like, Celine jump off a couple more tall things, crash through a couple more plates of sugar glass, and wear a much uglier coat than before. But none of that stuff.
To be fair, that is sort of Underworld's MO, is starting out with, like, way too much information and her jumping off a building.
Sure.
But I totally agree with you that tonally it was so wrong. I want her to tell me. I want more of her. She's already so little as a character that it's like I want her perspective on it. I mean, she did talk, but it, you know what I mean? It felt so empty. And I wanted to know what happened. How did they find out? You know, I wanted to really understand, but they did gloss over it in a very impersonal way.
Yeah.
I guess I just wanted to note that they always do that. They always give us too much information, but somehow this was even more, you know, empty and didn't translate.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is a tone thing. I think part of it is the, like, I'm not used to this in an Underworld beginning. My case is that, like, that could be the exact same opening of a very interesting Underworld sequel, where the reality that now vampires and werewolves have been hunted and eradicated and the subject of a genocide by the human race that is normalized to human society, that is so big. And there is so much drama and world building and new layers to this lovingly woven mythology that they are not interested in unpacking any of the new stories that would come out of, like, this big world-shaking thing that happened. I'm saying the events of what happens in the body of the film feel like they're acting like that never happened. And almost like, other than a 16-foot werewolf, nothing in the movie is as interesting as that. The rest of it is just this fucking thing where, like, I don't know, this, like, hot actor in an ugly detective jacket is, like, going through, like, the University of Toronto, like, library study space, pretending that it's a fucking police office.
Yeah.
They're just taking us through all this fucking shit that looks shitty and, like, the worst CGI lichens we've ever seen, like, weightlessly jumping onto cars that don't move. Leading you to believe that a lichen weighs about 4 pounds, and practical lichens that look like rubber suits. It's just the whole body of this movie is just filled with so much shit that you can't care about in this very mythology centric universe that opens with this big piece of mythology and then is like, yeah, oh, okay, all right, well, consider, yes, okay, vampire children are getting dragged out into the street by, like, a fascist regime that's, like, holding them into the sunlight, and it's all very scary. But what if Kate Beckinsale dressed like shit? consider, what if the hot jacket lady had an ugly jacket? I'm sorry, I'm done.
I think she stole that jacket
from the military supply store where they sell slinky.
I just want to stick up for Celine's taste. That's one place I won't go. You know what I mean?
Was that the best jacket they had in there? They didn't have the same thing in black or blue? She looks like a fucking Matrix Confederate. I'm sorry. I'm done.
The images that it starts off with in that, you know, shaky cam District 9 news footage are so weighty.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not expecting an underworld movie to have, like, the best taste about how it approaches these things.
Yeah.
But, like, to just kind of, like, bring in imagery that, like, evocative and reminiscent of a lot of, like, horrid real-world shit, and then completely ditch it.
Yeah.
Is, like,
disrespectful. Huh? It's
so weird. And, like, there's, even if we do, like, abandon the inciting event itself of, like, of covering the actual discovery and shit, like you're saying, PJ, there are so many stories that could involve this. Like, what if it were, like, you know, a more tightly wound trying to figure out who blew it for us, like who gave up the ghost and trying to hunt them down, or maybe even like in a 12 Angry Men situation, but six of them are werewolves and six of them are vampires and they're all duking it up, fucking anything. But it just, like,
or finding land or space, like a journey somewhere to like a new chapter, but it was just like so vacuous. Like,
Becky, you want to take a crack at the synopsis? You've been our go-to.
I think this is going to be easier. Yeah, because, like, we're not talking about, like, a billion, you know, convoluted, though now, good. Love those rules. Love the mythology. Love it. Respect it. So we open, we find out that humans have discovered the viruses, which I guess technically they are. You know, they were bit by bat and by wolf, so. And so vampires and lycans are being hunted by humans. It's really, through all this ugly found footage, we're seeing people, like, vampires get dragged into the sunlight. We're seeing lycans get, like, completely, like, massacred. It's, like, very crazy. So then we see Celine, like, she's, like, jumping off of a building, headed somewhere. I will say some of that action at the top was kind of fun, okay? She came to play, you know? I mean, she didn't come to play. She came to do actual hard work, and she did that in the beginning, so I had a lot of hope then. So she goes to meet Michael, who isn't, you know, is another actor, and he, you know, there he was. And so she's going to meet him at the pier. He gets shot by, like, I don't know, I don't even know what city we're in. And then there's, like, a bomb that explodes between Celine and Michael, like, right at the very end. She wakes up 12 years later in this testing facility called Antigen. She has been, what's the word,
cryogenically frozen.
Assurant.
She has been assurant for 12 years. And she, she's having these visions, and, like, she escapes from the lab. She kills a bunch of them, and then she's trying to find Michael because she can see Michael's, like, perspective, right? So she ends up,
or
she catches up to,
she thinks is Michael,
and come to find out it's a little girl. Little girl's like 12 years old. Isn't that, like, a random coincidence? Come to find out it's Celine's daughter. She was pregnant. Celine's like, kind of bummed, Mrs. Michael. And then the daughter is, like, the first hybrid child ever. So all the lycans are actually in control of Antigen, and so they're creating super lycans, and there's this one detective who's way too involved in lycan and vampire business, and he decides to help Celine take over and save the little girl.
There's also a couple other guys.
Yeah. That's actually true. There are a couple other guys. I hate them all, though, so it's fine. There's no, you know, there's no Titans in this. There's no Bill Nye. There's no Michael Sheen. We don't have, like, the incredible, just, like, the fucking reverence that they bring a viewer. You know, like, we don't have that in this, and it's, you really feel it. You really feel it as you're watching.
Yeah, we do get Charles Dance shows Chucky up Dance. For a while. Yeah. Pardon?
Oh, but, no, like, I said Chucky Dance. I was interrupting you to make the thing you were saying stupid. I'm sorry.
He's my favorite member of the Beastie Boys. But but, like, he really, you know.
Is he the Vampire Coven dad?
Yeah. I was hyped to see him because I feel like he usually does the kind of, like, Bill Nye, like, kind of scenery chewing, like, evil dude thing, like in Game of Thrones, what have you. But he played it really straight. And that was simply not, this movie didn't need another half-hearted attempt to, like, be like, that's my son. You know, like, we needed someone to just go ape mode, liven up the proceedings for a second. Liven up the proceedings is also, like, a strange turn of phrase because, like, this movie is technically action-packed. Like PJ was saying at the start of this record, there is a lot less focus on the mythology and a lot more, again, purely like at the script being filmed level, a lot more action. But it doesn't feel that way. And I struggled to articulate why that didn't work.
I think it's because we weren't really rooting for anyone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you don't care who wins, the action just sort of washes over you apathetically. Like, that's why I was excited in the beginning. Celine was, like, really kicking ass, and the moves were actually really cool and, like, exciting because I still was excited about the movie at that point. And then, you know, come to find out, like, we just jump over a billion details. She's mourning the loss of Michael, who we were never really in love with to begin with, you know? So, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, this really, watching this really made me want to eat my words, talking about Bill Nye's performance in Lycans. I still agree with myself in that it was just, like, the same the entire time. But, boy, was he there. He showed up. He was in the movie, and he meant it all, you know?
You know, at the very least, he was having fun. People, yeah. Like, everybody in the all three of the previous films compared to this one is emoting on the level of a Barnum and Bailey Circus College graduate compared to what we're seeing here now. It is so just fucking deadpan and, like, really, like, surprisingly low-energy performances across the board for a situation that is, let's call it freaky.
It was boring and it was too sciencey. Like, I missed just, like, the way it felt like fantasy films that were also coolly sci-fi, you know? Like, it was just, like, so clinical and lame.
Don't think I'm blowing anyone's mind to say that this had, like, a lot of writers. This had way more writers than what is credited on screen, which I think is, like, 4. They didn't have a completed script when they started, and the one that they started with, no one was really happy with. They didn't know what the ending was going to be before they started shooting. Apparently, there was, like, a whole problem where, like, they were trying to, like, the creature design department was trying to keep up because the idea of what the Lycans would actually look like was something that was frequently changing. One of the writers, and this is what's so interesting to me, is a guy that, Dixon, you might be familiar with, J. Michael Straczynski, right?
The name's not immediately ringing a bell, but let me...
I don't know if you were ever a Babylon 5 guy.
I was not. I very easily could have been. I found myself in the... I'm completely making this up. There's no actual basis for this, but, like, I feel like you were either a Babylon 5 guy or you were a Stargate guy. And I was a Stargate guy.
What a interesting tribalism to pick.
to let me be clear, to make up on the spot. I felt it to be true, and now it's not the case.
They've been warring for generations. You know, they both came from, you know, one descendant, Gene Roddenberry, whose children got bitten by a virgin and a dweeb.
And the network UPN.
Fuck. My relationship with J. Michael Straczynski is that he wrote one of my favorite runs on The Amazing Spider-Man, like, ever. The era in, like, the early 2000s where Peter Parker is, like, a public school teacher and is, like, it's a little white savior-y, it's a little Freedom Writers, but he also gives you the issue where Peter comes out to Aunt May for the very first time, and it's a whole Spider-Man issue that is just them clearing, like, 15 years of air over a table conversation. It is so beautifully done. And like a lot of extremely gifted comic writers who've done, like, one or two completely seminal runs on, like, an iconic character, he's also tried to make it as a working actor in the film and TV industry, which means that his name is on all kinds of trash. You know, like, this is also the playbook if you're, like, Michael Caban or, like, Jeff Loeb. And so, like any movie that has, like, 18 different writers continually trying to, like, keep up with the scenes and, like, writing things the night before they're going to be filmed, you will have not only a lot of inconsistency and plot threads that are barely connected, but you guys might disagree with this. I find that Underworld is an example of this thing where a movie that has, like, 85 writers will randomly have one scene that is actually, like, kind of nice. Like, kind of punching above its weight class. This movie, as Becky was saying earlier, does not have a heart, does not have a soul, does not have, like, an emotional, like, passionate center that it's really running towards. And the central relationship, which should be, like, the emotional underpinning, that Celine finds out that she has a fully grown daughter.
Underpinning awakening.
Underpinning underworld underpinning. Awaken pin underworlding. Yeah, you know, I mean, this is like a fully grown girl, and, you know, she inherited the British accent gene.
Yes.
They don't have much of a relationship, and there's not a lot to this girl, except occasionally her face will turn into a CGI YouTube horror prank where it gets all scary. But there is one extremely striking little moment that I don't know who had to fight for this. I don't know if this was Beckinsale, like, winning a battle in trying to keep, like, what is now her franchise retaining some dignity. But she goes and checks up on her daughter, who is slicing her arms to see how quickly it takes them to heal. And they talk about their complete lack of a relationship and why she seems so cold. And Celine opens up to this girl who's, I'm sorry, name I don't even, subject to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, hang on. This actually ties in. I'm going to put, I had this question in my back pocket without looking at a browser or anything. Can you name a character besides Celine?
Detective Sebastian.
I'm shocked you can do that.
That was so impressive to me. It was like you did a backflip in front of me.
Yeah, like, I literally don't know a fucking anyone else. Sorry, Peach. Yes.
Yeah, that was all me interrupting. But
it's a good fucking question. It's relevant. Yeah.
It is subject, relevant.
Subject to.
Celine. She has a beautiful scene with her daughter, Subject to. And,
you know when Sub just tells it like it is.
Look, what's her name is cutting herself. And that's not okay. That's not okay.
She was.
I like that you call her Subby.
Sub. You know when Sub's just like being a little crazy.
my sub is just acting out.
Sounds like your sub is being a brat. Sounds like they're asking for it. Sorry.
Keep going.
Underworld aftercare. Jesus Christ. Whoa. Detective Sebastian. She has a scene with her daughter, and okay? And there's a
it's
nice line.
It's kind of nice, yeah.
The line is, my heart is not cold, it's broken. And if every scene in the movie was written by whoever wrote that scene, maybe I'd know more than one character's name. And I only remembered his name because I thought it was fucking interesting that Underworld finally has like a protagonist of color in this pearly white series.
Yeah,
I was interested
true.
That he's a human character, and I was interested in
Raze is
he's just so tertiary, you know.
Yeah, he
isn't driving the plot and asking questions in the way that I thought this guy was going to be. But wait a second, he disappears from the movie for 30 minutes. He vanishes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a space alien for caring about that. I'm sorry. I know I'm really rambling. This is such an all over the place episode, but like this movie, there's no center.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's hard to talk about this movie in any kind of way where we're developing a cohesive thesis or like, you know, hashing out our feelings, trying to figure out why we're passionate about what we're passionate about, why we like or dislike what we, because like it's all just such a fucking, it just feels so weightless. It's such a fucking nothing burger. And like I'm sure, you know, more issues will that I'll have opinions on will arise over the course of the conversation. But like, you know, it's tough to like, because the overwhelming I said this off mic earlier, but I am, because of like medical bureaucracy and having moved and switching primary care and all that, I'm a few days off of an Adderall prescription, and this movie is the artistic equivalent of being a few days off of an Adderall prescription. It's like of events are observable, but trying to work up any feeling beyond kind of sleepy about what you're witnessing is monumentally difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, like it feels a little happier, but in a way that's wrong.
Yeah. You know, okay, so I feel like if we really break it down, you know, why don't we care about this? Besides the cinematography and, like, the plot lines we don't love, that's happened in the past, right? And I've still cared about them.
Yeah.
I think it ultimately comes down to the first movie is about justice. It's about Celine has this, like, gut feeling that something is not right about her world and the order that it lives in, you know, and she gets on a quest to figure this out, and she realizes like she's been lied to and betrayed. So it's like about like justice, and then the second one is about, I think, deepening that justice, but also like the actual love she has for this like whole new chapter of who Michael is and the creation of the species and like fighting for that. And then Lycans, I think, is very spirited as well, right? That's, like, absolutely about, like, justice as well. Mm-hmm. And this is, like, this was supposed to be a love story, right? Like, this is supposed to be about Celine's love for Michael not being there has broken her heart, but she has to find the love for her daughter. I couldn't even locate when she realized she was her daughter. Like,
yeah.
There was no expression or, like, pointed cinematic moment that was like, oh, it just dawned on her. That is actually her daughter. Because, obviously, I knew the very second that it was a little girl, like, instantly. But, like, when was Celine supposed to know that? And, like, her complete passionless awash of, like, apathy. And I agree with you, Peach. That scene was sweet. But I didn't even feel her be heartbroken. I just felt her be asleep, you know? Like, I just didn't feel like she was even missing Michael. I didn't feel like she cared about her daughter. I just felt like she was going through the motions.
Yeah. I mean, that entire... You did a fucking admirable job, like, as always, summing up this movie and, like, the working pieces of it. But one of the things that I was thinking about going into this episode is that, like, it is uniquely hard to describe, like, the broad kind of movements and structure of the plot without it sounding like a six-year-old recapping an episode of a TV show.
Yeah.
She first they were shooting everyone, and she was running away from the guys who were shooting, and you see her husband for just a second, and he looks like he did before, but shitty and like a different guy, and then he turned into a werewolf. They shoot him, she goes underwater with him, and then they take her out, and she wakes up, and it's 12 years, and then she breaks out, but then she's got to go back into the place she broke out of. She throws Wes Bentley out a window. He got eyebrows, and then when she go back, there's a guy following her. She's like, why are you following me? And then she goes into the place with him. Like, the actual where do I need to go? What am I looking for is so... It's so unclear, and it's so all over the place.
It's missing.
It's missing like a clear center. And
also the son. Okay, so then there's another vampire. He like scopes Celine out, and he's with this sort of like dying, very very undercover, like live in the sewers kind of coven, like what's left of the vampires. And he's all about like, it's time to fight, and he's like really inspired by Celine because Celine used to like be this like death dealer fighter. But that theme isn't really clear either, because I understand what his dad's saying, like, what are we gonna do, just die? Like, we're just gonna die? Like,
yeah.
The theme of we need to fight until we die, it doesn't really serve the love story of Celine and her daughter. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like everything is sort of, like, loosely tied.
There's no, like, observable...
message.
Yeah, or like, stakes, or, like, if-then... Like, everything that happens doesn't feel as though it's the result of an action taken previously. It just sort of happens. Like, Celina gets out, finds out that she has a daughter. They find a vampire coven. And then I think the only time where, like, the preceding, the following event is immediately related to the preceding event is when the vampire coven gets raided by Lycans, who then kidnap Selena's daughter, and Celina has to go rescue them. But even that, like, I don't know why, how the Lycans found the vampire compound. I don't know why or when Celina had a kid. Like, was she pregnant when she went into cryo state? Like, what?
I think so. I mean, that's my assumption. It's not clear.
That has to be hit, right? But, like, I don't...
Maybe they cloned her?
No, I think she was pregnant.
Can vampires get...
Because she's not cloned. They were trying to clone her for the first time.
Googling that, PJ.
Vampires get pregnant? I mean, look. I didn't think they could see their reflections. And then I thought guns couldn't kill them. And then I thought guns
they
could
sometimes
kill them.
Can. It's very clear.
Wait, can I? I must have missed something. I must have missed when Celine does something to become immune to sunlight.
Oh, yeah. End of the second one.
Because Alexander gave her the good blood.
Right. Okay.
So
thank you.
Cool.
I forgot
she's
about
cool
that.
She's getting a. She's tan now.
She's chill now.
How did I can't fucking forget. Okay, but she can start people's hearts now.
Yeah,
too,
she's cool.
Though.
She's cool. She's a turn. She's like the tree of life. No.
Obviously.
Okay. Another thing that's just like killing me about this movie is the complete lost opportunity. Of she's more powerful than all of us, and she hasn't figured it out yet, about Subject 2. And Subject 2, okay, so there's a huge, super insane Lycan, like the hugest Lycan ever, kind of cool, like a cool monster. Why doesn't the little girl defeat him? She's supposed to these powers we can't even fathom, right? She's the first hybrid. And she, I mean, you know, stylistically, she looks completely different than her dad, who was a hybrid. So I'm not into that. But anyway, it's just insane to me that they, like, there was nothing special about her. She was a good fighter, but there was nothing about her that was like, wow, what a new chapter. What a new species. Like, she is the key. Like, there's no Aang energy, right? Of, like, her being the one.
Becky, you're totally right, because like the whole movie sets the way the movie is set up is like a classic, like major villain is kind of like the major villain is like a small, late middle-aged science guy who's pulling all the strings, and also huge enforcer guy. So it would make absolute sense, in like so many action movies do this, for your main character to kill the big one, but then the new character who's getting hyped up this whole... No, excuse me, for your main character to kill the small science guy, and the new character who's been getting hyped up this whole time to get, like, this big fucking new threat. Like, that is exactly... Like, that's the easiest thing in the world to get right.
They teed her up for what?
She go, ah.
To just look like... Shit. Yeah, like a jump scare.
To rip a 53-year-old man's throat out.
I was like, cool. Everybody's done that once.
I'm looking at this whole thing. She resurrects a vampire so easily. That seems like it changes everything. She can start a car with a letter opener because she's fucking chill as hell. There's this weird pacing hiccup where Act 3 begins and everyone's dumping exposition. The hot guy, the poorly costumed hot guy. The costumes in this movie are dog shit.
Yeah, they're very bad.
They've got a bunch of sexy people. They don't look good. Hey, everyone, we're in the Twilight era. This symmetrically faced British man who's going to follow her around for a couple scenes, he got a fucking pea coat, dude. Celine's got... we're in the fucking Edward Cullen era now, dude. You got a fucking peacoat, dude. Celine elevator trick. She do Looney Tune where she shoot a circle and the circle cuts it out. So when it lands on her, she go through it and there's a big circle of elevator floor on her head, like a little hat. She can spin
it
around.
I loved that because it is a callback to the first film though.
Yes. I remember that where she shoots the circle around her.
Yeah. So that was like are you a real fan? You guys know this one? It's
lots
a classic.
Of Easter eggs for the fans.
Granger bait. So
tons
many eggs for the
eggs.
Fans in
yeah.
this film. So
and there's
a lot
so,
of eggs for the fans.
So like subtle and like just like hard to catch him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just like the rubber mask of Scott Speedman that I assume that guy was wearing before he got fucking I'm sorry. The way they have to dispatch of not being able to get Scott Speedman.
So feels
like something out of like The Lonely Island. Like it feels like something out of the beginning of MacGruber. Okay, here
Scott, are you okay?
guys, oh fuck.
just shoot him. They just fucking shoot him. There's two movies about him being the biggest, strongest guy in the world. And he goes, like a couple of regular dudes and just shoot him with a big bullet.
He go down. He go, oh no. Okay, I have two real points here, okay? Number one, Made of Stone, Ryan Holder remix by Evanescence. Did you know Evanescence was still making music in 2012?
Yeah, they're still, I feel like they are today, right?
I hope so. I'm willing to go check it out. I want that shit to bring me to life.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, there's like a movie tie-in song like this, or like the Snow Patrol song from Spider-Man 3. That just has the Pavlovian feeling of, like, I've either been waiting at this movie theater for too long and I want to go home, or I got here too early. Mm. And you're just going to hear it on repeat in the Regal cinemas. Okay, here is the actual thing that I care about here. So I guess the gang war is back on. I guess after the whole board has been cleared, everything's been started over again. The werewolves are the deep state.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who are leading a genocide on all the vampires, and I guess only some of the werewolves. But now Celine is completely loyal just to vampires. Is like a fan of that order now.
Yeah.
Vampires and werewolves are still at war. They're still fighting each blood other. War. They're at World War. Blood War. Is that blood I get, war. Good thing there's another sequel.
I'm sorry I keep
it's hard I not just, to cuz everything war. Feels like I want to dig, you know.
Like, I want the fawns to come into this room and hit me and make me work again. Like
yeah. It's sorry. Just, you know, but PG, you bring up such a good point. Like, I feel like none of the lessons stuck with her, you know,
yeah.
of just like, all right, I got this daughter. I mean, I guess she's coming at it from the perspective of like, all right, I have to protect her by all means possible. And these happen to be the obstacles. But I'm not getting the vibes that she's like, you know, like, why can't we be friends? I have no, there's none of that energy. It's just like, I really feel like, Dixon, you're so right. They should have had a movie of lichens and vampires joined together against humans. And then maybe mm-hmm. there's like one lichen betrayal that like leads to our sequel after that, but.
Yeah, yeah, just something continuing the theme of, like, the pointlessness of the war, because that's what it's all been about. It's just, like, it is a completely arbitrary conflict that, like, extremely old people just decided was the right thing to do.
Deep State Lichens, boo.
Deep State Lichens, boo. Didn't we just watch an entire fucking movie about how they were an oppressed underclass?
Yeah.
That even after 8 centuries, okay, is still only barely hanging on in a war that makes absolutely no sense and is unfair. And we're supposed to like enjoy the like the release of like the lichens breaking out of their chains. Is it all the lichens who are installed in like the British state? Now, is it all
that's
of them?
The fucking, that's
is it
the
just
fucking,
one or two of them? Is it
I
all of them?
I don't know. Because one of the fuckers, one of the guys that they cut to in the opening District 9 bit is the main villain of the film, who is a lichen, and he is one of the people saying, like, we've got to completely eradicate both vampires and werewolves. Like, what's his story? Like, was this a plan concocted by the lichens to, like, call the weak ones or just to, like, allay themselves of suspicion? Did he get turned into a lichen after he did this? And now he's like, I've got to fucking do this, you know? Like, there's... What?
So many questions. On. The vibe I was getting was he wanted to become a lichen. Like, they were humans who got bit and, like, really embraced lichen culture because they were talking about how, like, his wife, James's right. mom, was like, your mother betrayed us and she made a human. Like, I was like, oh, my God. I can't wait till this movie is over. Like, it was just, I don't know, though. I don't know it.
There's just so many more interesting hooks for this movie. Like, lying dead and run over in the tire tracks that lead to the crashed car of Underworld Awakening against a big oak tree. Like, fucking...
If I let Mean Peach off the leash.
Mean Peach is off the leash.
Mean Peach Blood Wars.
It's okay. Take this energy and use it towards, like, Detective Sebastian. I know you have a weird soft spot for him, but, like.
They don't have a weird soft spot. They just remembered his name. They interpreted that as a weird soft
spot. That is a weird soft spot.
It kind of is, honestly.
That is, honestly, like, Okay, we've been talking. Becky was saying that I have a weird soft spot for Detective Sebastian on account of I remember his name. But within like the emotional language of like relating to an Underworld movie, okay? Knowing a character's name is
you
like when you
love Detective Sebastian. Don't you?
Worse than that, dude. Worse than that. This is like when you've known someone for like a week and then you leave an Instagram comment that's like, whoa, look at this shitbag looking ugly in this pic. And you're like, you're trying to like signal like, oh, we're friends. Like I can joke around with you. We're good now. I can be mean to you and you'll totally be like, oh, that's because we're friends. It's kind of like I'm doing that. It's
but
kind of
like, hey, what the hell?
whoa. Underworld Awakening is like, oh, okay, I guess you're learning names, that's normal.
I imagine that actor being like, you know his name? That actor's like, hey.
What the fuck, dude? They paid me like a couple million a day to like go to the like University of Toronto Public Library.
Stop and, saying like, that!
It is every, like, in the way that the previous Underworld movies were, like, every town Europe, this one really is every town Canada. It's like,
No, it's every college Canada. Every interior set looks like a different part of a fucking, like, I kept thinking of the Mystery Science Theater episode Time Chasers, where, like, the villain of the movie has a lair in, like, the mezzanine, like, library that has like a big circus mirror. That is the cheapest looking thing in this movie, is that the whole movie takes place at Underworld University.
Yeah.
Have I mentioned that his jacket is ugly?
Yeah.
Okay, because I can go over it again if anyone forgot.
I think that is the extent of everything you said about Detective Sebastian. You were like, what's that fucking Detective Sebastian? His coat looks fucking stupid. He doesn't have anything to do in this movie, and we were still like, you fucking love
you
that
love Detective Sebastian. I know. I
won't
it
shut
is.
Up.
I'm trying to get that jacket off of him. You know what I'm saying?
I think that horrible fucking coat would look a lot better on my bedroom floor.
No, he could crack my case wide open. I'm just saying.
He doesn't even do. He's a bad detective.
He's a bad detective.
He looks at a body ripped apart, clearly ripped apart by a lichen, and the other detective's like, a lichen did this, and he's like, no. And that's all his work in the field that we see.
He's such a dick to like his little protege. Like, he's just like, hey, do you need anything? And he gives him a look that's like, You want a fucking handout, you little scum? It wasn't that easy for me coming up. And I'm like, what's your vibe? Like, why? He's so pissed.
What happens to that little guy? Does he die?
At the end, he's like, I'll lead the cops another way. You guys get out of here.
Okay, Underworld Awakening obsessive. You're freaking obsessed with this movie. Like, you're literally obsessed with it.
He was limping away. I guess I want to fuck him.
That's how I felt this whole episode, is that anytime somebody, like, I mean, character name or an event from the film, I don't feel wrong, even though I'm on a podcast to discuss this movie.
Like judging us for remembering.
Jesus Christ.
We're like, our job is to, like, remember things from a movie. And now it feels like you're the kid that did like both options for the assignment and you get extra credit for it. But no, like Detective Sebastian is a fucking prick to his sidekick, and he's really bad at detecting werewolves. But his wife was a vampire.
She was a nurse first.
Oh, okay. I'm
most
sorry
nurses.
I'm not as obsessed with Underworld Awakening as you, dude. I'm fucking sorry. Detective
Instagram profile is to be believed. You really care.
Detective Sebastian is hangry. He needs to go check in at the university dining hall. He needs to spend some swipes and get himself a salad.
Yeah, somebody swipe him into the University of Ontarontuver.
Paul Haslinger is scoring a movie that belongs in three dimensions. You can just look at more of it. Can I touch on the 3D for just a quick second?
Yeah, it really seems like you can reach out and touch on it.
Fuck you!
That was really perfect.
Oh, that was really good. I'm not going to be able to... I can't plus that now. I can't... Fucking, This is 2012, okay? The last Underworld movie comes out at the beginning of 2009, which is the year that a lot of the, like, test cases for, like, 3D are really starting to come out. Like things that are shot in 3D. That's the year of Coraline. That's the year that ends with Avatar. And then 2010 becomes the year that, like, everyone is trying to keep up with Avatar. So you get a lot of movies that were shot in native 3D that are really trying to, like, maximize that. But then you also have other movies, like Dixon was mentioning, Clash of the Titans, which is one of the earliest, loudest examples of a movie that is post-converted that looks so shitty. It's, you know, it's shot in 2D, and then someone has the work of cutting out individual actors and giving their faces dimension. So, like, the person who does the 3D conversion for Man of Steel at some point has to render baby Superman's penis in 3D.
Have to.
I wish I had that job. And I...
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
You can't want that job. That's a job you can't want.
You shouldn't say you want that job to anyone, let alone on Spotify.
A recorded studio. No, the bar is low on Spotify. I can... Yeah.
My cat keeps approaching me, and then I laugh so percussively that he runs out of the room.
Oh, fuck, that was
anyway,
so funny.
Guys,
I don't know.
We're sorry about Dixon. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Dixon, can you apologize?
Do self-crit.
Can you say sorry, Dixon?
So, let me backtrack to the place where the new cut will go when you're editing this. So,
dream job.
Superman... So Superman is circumcised. How do I know this? First of all, I saw the film in 3D. Okay.
We all need to go to a place like this. A place where Superman is circumcised.
Sorry. More and more movies were shooting in 3D with a very, very specific kind of camera rig. Because there was a while where they earnestly believed that that was going to be the future of movie releases. And now we know that it pretty definitively isn't. There were a lot of really interesting movies that came out of the 3D wave that really, really use it as, like, a storytelling device that really get you into the movie, that really showcases the production design and even performances in a way that's really beautiful. I even feel like I was a little bit too dismissive of the 3D on our Spy Kids episode, because at least that was a clear case of Robert Rodriguez trying to make the movie going experience, like showing up to a movie theater, exciting and special. And now that's fallen by the wayside in a whole special new way. 2012 was Sony Pictures being in a very dire financial spot, trying to put on a game face and go out and be single at the club. It was Sony Pictures being like, hey, we've got a new tagline, make believe, okay? We've got 3D cameras, we got a whole new Spider-Man. He's going to be here for a long time, I'm sure. 2012 is going to be a fucking banner year for us, gang. And so... Underworld was shot on a new camera rig that was at least new for 2012. It was the Red Epic, The Red digital camera system, for a lot of people, that's like their favorite model of like cinematic digital camera. It was shot on this, and a lot of the footage looks really, really clean and shiny, and I'm sure it looked just fine in 3D. What I know for sure is that the pre-existing color palette of the Underworld movies, where everything is really dark and really blue and really shadowy, doesn't work in 3D. Things have to be a lot more cleanly lit, in part because the image is always going to be darkened by the lenses that you're putting on. And even then, a lot of 3D projectionists don't brighten the image to compensate for that, so most 3D movies looked like fucking crud. The result of it is that you get this Underworld movie that is, at the same time, like, a little bit more visually legible, has a little bit more of a color palette, is, like, a little brighter looking. It doesn't cut as often as it could, because your brain can't process a lot of fast cuts in 3D. But it also is made very unconfidently by directors who are working on a camera system that I don't think they've ever used before. And the whole movie looks like, I mean, like you guys were saying earlier, like it looks like a fan film. Yeah. I'm going to be really interested to find out if like the next sequel is 2016, 4 years later. That's a long time for an Underworld sequel. And I'd be interested to see if they're even still bothering with 3D by then. My guess is no, but the 3D of it does make this worse. A very, very funny little artifact in like the period of the 2000s that like the Underworld series like covers. It's one of the only interesting things about this movie. Sometimes DeWolf, he go into camera and he's chomping and you go, you're reaching out like an idiot with your hands out. I am not jealous of the person who had the job of rendering these werewolves in 3D. I'll tell you who I am jealous of, though. That riff is staying in.
It literally can't.
I gotta do some magic as to what parts of I'll do it like this. I'll leave this in. Either I've cut or we're returning to a riff PJ did about being the guy who had to digitally cut out Superman's baby dick in Man of Steel. And I use the word cut deliberately. I think I've said something about something like this recently, but I've only only just lately started to really pinpoint what exactly like a early 2010s movie looks like and is like, just because that's, you know, an era I'm naturally close to. And when I started paying attention to movies being released, that's sort of where that's the point in time that I sat in. So like, you know, I'm not, it's very recent and it's hard for me to, I can't just point at something like I can with the 2000s, 80s, 90s, et cetera, and just be like, that's where that was from. But I think recently I've been developing that ability a little bit more as time goes by. And this is so fucking steeped in that. In a sort of like trying to wash out or wash away like leftovers from the early 2000s aesthetics kinds of things, but kind of being left with without much else.
That's such a good way of putting it,
because it does ditch a lot of like the Matrix aping elements of the first and second movie, but like as a result what we're kind of left with is this just
directionless this,
there's no real identity. Even if it were to be completely cribbed from something else, like that would be at least something to grab onto. But this doesn't even have that, you know?
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. Like, Underworld maybe should have stayed in the first decade of the 2000s, you know? Like, it embrace the time period then, and I think it made perfect sense. It was fun. This, but I'm speaking specifically about the first two. Like, that was so right, you know, like, it was so, it was what it was. It was authentically of its time. So it's just now when you, like Dixon was saying, when you strip that away, what you get is, like, literally costumes, props, and actors. Like, it doesn't feel like it has a soul. And I understand they couldn't make a film in 2012 that was Matrix-y. Like, you can't do that, you know, unless it's, like, 20 years later and you're, like, you have, like, respect for that aesthetic, you know? Because it's, like, in hindsight, it was so cool. But, like, in 2012, when you're looking back at 2003, you're, like, oh, that was corny, you know? Instead of, like, actually, it was really cool. Because it's, like, you're too close to it, you know? And so I understand why they stripped that away. But what you're left with is no one caring about anything.
Yeah, and a lot of it is, like you're saying, Becky, like, because of comparison, because, like, the first two are so indebted to those kinds of aesthetics, and then the third one didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, exactly.
And was instead really aesthetically grounded in both the time period and the guy who was doing production designs on both of those movies. So he was able to kind of, like, integrate those two time periods and worlds and everything, you know, I would argue fairly seamlessly.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, but this one just doesn't, like, it's a wash in its own combination of ambition and lack of ambition.
And combined with what Peej was saying, in that they had to do it the specific way, embracing the 3D of it all, then you're left without the palette we recognize, the aesthetics we recognize, and, like, the energy and the pace that we recognize. So, like, what are you left with? You're left with a plot line that is amiss and a lead character who's directionless. Like, I just feel like you guys cracked the code.
This kind of feels like if they made a Shaft movie in 1987. Like, if they kept making movies that feel like quintessentially of the 70s. And they make a couple of those, and then you're just at, like, the tail ass end of, like, a new era. And I think you guys hit on something really, really key about, like, Underworld is, like, about to be 20 years old. And we are far enough away from it that, like, the B-movie effect of how shriekingly 2003 that first movie is, like, part of, like, the fun for us. And, you know, maybe we can talk about this more in the next episode, but, like, I do kind of think Underworld is, like, rebootable. Like, I think if Kevin Grievous is not going to be involved, like, figuring out the new sequels, figuring out, like, at least the new broad direction for, like, where they're going, because this is one of the first times that, like, you really feel, like, the lack of him. You feel the absence of them going away from his, like, mythology Bible and going to just, like, hey, Kate Beckinsale, what do you want to do? Daughter would be cool. Okay, cool. We will get 372 screenwriters working on that, and won't give any of them the chance to get close. Without that, like, you kind of just can't keep going. But I do think you could have rebooted this. I do think you could take a new whack at Michael and Celine and start over again. I don't think you have to remake them. But I think there are new ways into this thing, but it would either have to be shriekingly of a new era or something that has some sort of, like, affection for, like, a throwback to these aesthetics that were just a huge part of what people like about these movies. I don't think that's dismissive. They don't have to be, like, The Godfather. They don't have to be Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies in terms of, like, emotional investment. Sometimes something really can be just, like, a very, like, engaging style piece that has also done all of this homework. Like, I think that's totally possible, but as of this stage, like, this is a dead horse. This is a horse that they have been beating, and
yes, it really is.
Dare I say, I don't think the lemon has juice, which is why I'm even more excited that there's a whole other fucking movie after this.
I can't believe it. Peach, I love what you're saying. Like, I think you're right. I think the culture of it, the aesthetics of it, there is more juice in that lemon, but not this one. Pretty much done with Celine. I feel like a traitor saying that, but like, I just feel like she's had more than an arc at this point of just like where she's come to, you know?
Yeah.
I would be really interested in like a Celine-like character in another, you know, future setting with the same culture and aesthetics. That would be really cool. Can you imagine like a like a, I don't know, 2300, it's year 2300, and what are vampires doing then? And hopefully it's all in blues, you know? Like, that would be cool. But yeah, I'm with you. I think we've sort of gotten what we can out of this, and we're all rind.
It's all, yeah. We're down to the resin, baby. We're down to seeds and stems, as the Underworld franchise goes. I don't know. I think there's got to be a pulpy backdoor way back into this series I'm sure if you gave me like $300 and like a weekend in a hotel with a word processor, I could probably come up with some ideas other than Celine but trans, as of right now.
Though, loving that.
It's right there.
It's
right there.
You're so for right. For the
taking. Yeah. She already has the hardest, like cool trans girl in, like, the lesbian bar energy where it's like, don't fuck with me, but, like, the 3 seconds of eye contact that we're gonna make, I'm gonna think about for 2 weeks. Like, yeah. And just like transgender women, she jumps off the tops of buildings and lands on her feet and is fine.
She's fine.
Her eyes glow blue. Yeah. Okay. She's been alive for 800 years, just like a trans girl. This feels risky, but I also feel pretty good about this one. This is intra-community joking, right?
Oh, here. 100%.
Should we pivot to rankings? I think I'm personally tapped out, and I just don't have any.
It feels we've like we're writing it. Underworld 4.
Yeah, no, we've said it. Like, I feel like you're right. I'll start. I will do it. So. One, I'm not gonna talk about this, okay?
Oh.
I'm just getting lost in my own, like, fucking psychosis right now. 1, 2, 3, 5, 4.
I'm not gonna talk about it either.
Yeah, you are.
3, 2, 5, 1, 4.
It's chestnut checkers. I'm not moving fast, all right?
Not so. E4.
As for me, over here tonight.
Knock Rupert Grint off that bitch. I want to see that little boy fall.
Just hit the front of the horse. Don't hit the whole thing. Like,
I want to see that redhead fly like a comet's tail.
Well, thanks for listening to Dead Horse. Okay, wait. 2, 1, 3, 5, 4.
I just realized I said 1, 2. I think 1 and 2, they're pretty interchangeable for me depending on the day, you know? Some days it's 2, yeah. Some days it's 1. I think talking about the time and appreciating the first one so much just like made me pick 1 today.
Yeah.
But both are great.
Yeah. It sounded like a dad, like you're trying to talk to him while he's reading the newspaper. Yeah.
Honestly, you sounded like Underworld 1 and 2 were your preferred children who died. And you're talking to like the Dewey Cox who lived. And you are really trying to be a good dad. You're trying not to seem affected by it like you have favorites. And Underworld Awakening is just saying, hey, sure wish Underworld 1 and 2 were here to enjoy this sunset. Anyway, Dad, do you want to try my whoopee cushion? And you, as the father world of the Underworld series, are like, yeah.
Father world?
Oh, shit. Underworld, more like mother world.
We gotta get out of here.
I want to go to father world, but I'm too short.
I want to go to father world, but I'm not allowed to without a dad.
All right. I want to go to father world and meet Iron Man.
I want to go to father world and buy a talking big mouth bass who's singing Frank Sinatra songs on the wall.
I think it's so weird, all those adults who do their honeymoon at Father World.
Yeah, I have a really hard time loving myself, so I like to go there to learn how to play chess and get ignored, like both at the same time. So.
Dead Horses, Dixon, Becky, and PJ. You can find us online. Our Twitter is at Dead Horse the Pod. Our Instagram is at Dead Horse Podcast. We'd like to thank Max Huffman for our art and me for editing this and doing the music. Although I don't know if you should thank me for that.